The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt, fetching Mrs. Hewitt's birthday, so I always play our song for every bump. I am back with Ronna McDaniel, chairwoman of the Republican National Committee. Good morning, Madam Chairwoman. Great to have you back, and congratulations. I want to talk about bankyourvote.com, but when I went all in for you for the chairmanship, it's because you believe in continuous improvement, Peter Drucker style, and this is it. This is bankyourvote.com. This is a big deal.
Thank you, Hugh. Happy birthday to your wife. Thank you so much for having me on. Yes, we're launching the Bank Your Vote initiative today. We have a website, bankyourvote.com. Go there. Byron Donald from Florida, Bill Hagerty from Tennessee, Steve Daines, and Richard Hudson from the NRCC and NRSC. We're all doing this together, and we're educating voters early and now about the importance of banking your vote early. It's twofold. We're going to protect your vote with poll watchers and poll workers, but we also can't let Democrats get a head start. So this starts now, this education, and in certainly key states like Pennsylvania, where we need voters to get in earlier and bank their vote before Election Day.
You know, this is what the argument I made last year when you were running for re-election is that we need continuous improvement, and we have to deal with the laws as they are, not as we wish they were. I would prefer one-day elections, but that's not it. We have election season now, and it's never going to change. So you are pushing the committee to adapt to new technologies. How does Bank Your Vote work?
So it's a website, bankyourvote.com, but when you get in to the system and you pledge to bank your vote, then we will start tracking you and we will start getting you engaged to be a poll watcher. We will help you figure out how and when to bank your vote in your state. And then we'll also have you connect with your neighbors and your friends to get them to bank their vote also. So this is going to be an ongoing education. Listen, we do this very well. The RNC has been investing in banking votes for a long time. We win in states like Florida and North Carolina and Iowa. But there are some states where lots have changed. Now Nevada, you get a ballot automatically, a live ballot. That's new to every single voter. Same with California. So we need to make sure we're educating voters on the laws that are on their books as they're changing post-COVID. We're also going to fight bad laws at the same time. But we can't continue to let Democrats get a head start in early voting. We have to make sure our voters understand the importance of getting your vote in early and then going and being a poll watcher or poll worker to watch that process and make sure that the election is being administered fairly.
And of course, you're the chairwoman, but you got a big committee. Did everyone buy into this? Because some of the old tribe may not have liked the idea that we're going to give in to election season, but this is what you have to do, evolve to win. Everybody on board?
I would say there's some that, you know, want to keep fighting in the courts, and we should. And that's why we have an election integrity committee, which has been run by Ashley McClay, our committee woman from D.C. And we are saying the things like you say. We want to see laws with voter ID, get rid of ballot harvesting. We don't want ranked choice voting. We want to fight that in every single state where we can. But when we get to Election Day and the laws are set, we have to play with the rules on the playing ground. And that's where this initiative is so critical. And just think about it like a race, Hugh. If a runner gets a 2-minute head start in a race, they're going to win most likely, right? Especially if it's a 100-meter dash, right? There's no 2 minutes there. But you know what I'm saying? A mile race.
Head starts matter.
Head starts matter. And we can't let the Democrats get a head start in voting and say we're going to make it all up on Election Day. And this is a lot of it's going to be educating voters on the importance of it. But they're not going to vote early unless they know their vote's secure. So protecting the vote is a big part of this.
So I encourage everyone to go to bankyourvote.com and register and become part of the effort to turn elections around. Now, Chairwoman Romney, I want to talk about debates with you. We have a fixed field. Former President Trump, former Vice President Pence just dropped his announcement video. Governor DeSantis is in. Senator Scott is in. Ambassador Haley is in. Former Governor Christie dropped his announcement yesterday. Vivek Ramaswamy's been in for a while. I think those seven will get the 40,000 minimum donation. Not sure if Governor Hutchinson will, maybe. Doubt Larry Elder will, and he's my colleague. And North Dakota Governor Borgum, not sure he will, and I don't think anyone else will. Do you think the field is fixed at those 10 serious candidates, seven of whom are likely to make the debate stage?
Yeah, I think we've got the field pretty settled now with who's getting in. I think everybody understood if I'm going to have to get a $40,000 small dollar donor base, I'm going to have to get in before August. So I think that field is mobilized, and I think we've created good criteria. And the reason why we've done this 40,000 small dollar donor threshold, when the Democrats had 60,000, but the Democrats have a better ecosystem at small dollar donations. And if our candidate is going to be anywhere near competitive with Joe Biden, they need to start creating this building block towards the success. And we need to make sure that they have a small dollar fundraising infrastructure. And that's why we're putting this requirement in. If you can't do this, you really shouldn't be running for president. You're not going to beat Joe Biden. So we're not doing it in a punitive way. We're doing it in a success metric. And if you can't do this to get on the debate stage, you're probably not going to be able to take on the incumbent president of the United States.
I'm not king of the forest. I'm not queen, not duke, not earl, to quote the Wizard of Oz. But if I were king of the forest, I would double that every debate. So I'd go from 40 to 80,000, from 1% to 2%, and then to 160,000. Do you have settled in your mind or within the committee yet how you will raise the levels for participation eligibility in subsequent debates?
Yeah, so we did put in this first debate criteria out that the debate criteria probably or will, we left the margin, increase in subsequent debates. And the debate committee, Dave Bossie runs the debate committee, and it's made up of RNC members. We really feel strongly about that. We haven't settled on that threshold yet. We want to see how this works, and we want to watch and see what this does for the candidates and who can make it, and then we'll settle on that. I will say also, Hugh, the polling criteria that we've put forward is really sound polling criteria. 800 likely Republican registered voters, not just adults, not just any registered voters. So we're really narrowing in on only Republican primary voters, which is something the RNC has never done in the past. And I also think it's going to help make polls more accurate with the way we've created this criteria.
You know, what I've always said is that the debates ought to be about the 30 million Republicans who vote in the primaries or the caucuses. There are 30 million from 2016. Maybe that number is up. Is that the guiding principle for the RNC, Madam Chairwoman?
It is. And it's also a big reason why we've put this pledge in, Hugh, the Beat Biden pledge. Nobody's going to get on the debate stage unless they're committed to supporting who the voters choose. It is about the voters. They get to pick the nominee. I don't get to pick the nominee. You don't get to pick the nominee. Republican primary voters get to select the delegates that eventually pick the nominee. And every candidate on that stage, we're asking them to show respect for their choice and their decision making after this process is done, and pledging to support them, because what do those voters want the most? They want to win the White House and they want to beat Biden. And that's why that's part of our criteria as well.
No, there are no secrets on the show. I want to be a part of this debate process, and I've told you that, and I've told the RNC that. But we haven't seen the schedule yet. You know, I got a life here, Madam Chairwoman. We've got to get a schedule.
We're slow rolling it. We are slow rolling the schedule a little. There's a lot of reasons why. I mean, contractually, it's hard with some of these venues. It'll speed up. It'll speed up after the first debate. I want you to be part of a debate too.
So, oh, we want 10.
My team's
I don't want
get
one. I want 10. I love the first. I love the way you're going about this. It's finally, Reince got it started and you've got it perfected along with David Bossie in the committee. But when do you think we'll see that schedule?
I think there'll be a debate announced per debate. I don't think you're going to see a whole schedule. I think we're going to see debate after debate. And there's reasons for that. I'm not going to relay all of that on the air, but there's reasons for us. It helps us negotiate by not having it all out at once. And I think we get better say in moderators and other things and networks and what they're going to give when we are slow rolling it a little bit.
Yeah, well, hey, we had to make media had to adjust when last time around 2015-16 CNBC threw John Harwood on there, and then they got exiled, and that's a good threat to keep over people. But I don't agree with some of our candidates who are wanting to eliminate NBC or CNN. I hope you guys aren't listening to that, because it seems to me that they've got to be, if the moderating panel is fine, if it's balanced, it won't matter. What do you think about the objections from candidates to NBC and CNN?
Hearing that from the candidates as much as from, you know, certain conservative media folks. Listen, I think as a party, we have to recognize that the path to the White House runs through independent voters. We have voters migrating, Republican voters are migrating to red states, go figure, because of low taxes and the schools were open during the pandemic. So Florida, Texas, Tennessee, they're getting redder. But the path to the White House runs through blue and purple states, which means we have to get in front of these independent voters. And I think that starts now. So I want good moderators. I don't want a moderator that's going to be a Democrat attacking our candidate. But I do think we have to expand our reach, and it can't just be through conservative media outlets.
100% agree. Now, let me talk to you about production values on the debates. I'm sure you watched the Twitter announcement of Governor DeSantis, and he did great. Twitter didn't do so great. If that happens to an RNC debate, we lose half the audience in 5 minutes. How much do production values matter to the RNC when they're making debate choices?
It does matter. I mean, we don't want the microphones not to work. You don't want the candidate, one candidate to get a microphone that works and one that doesn't. Or there's a whole bunch of things that go into production. What your listeners probably don't even know is the RNC doesn't pay for the debates. The networks do. And it's an expensive process.
Very.
But by doing this in a slow way, we're able to negotiate better with these networks. We didn't hand it all out at once. Like, we didn't give them all the candy at once. We're saying, let's see how you're doing. Let's see what your coverage is like. We want to see a CNN town hall and how that goes with Nikki Haley and Donald Trump. So we're watching the process as it goes. But we want to have that negotiation power. And part of that is not announcing all the debates at once.
Oh, I don't want to ever negotiate with you and David Bossie and your committee members. I don't. I'm going to lose. Chairwoman McDaniel, let's go back and close on Bank Your Vote, which is actually far more important down ticket than it is on the top of the ticket. We've got to get people registered all across the country. And I'm a Republican and people know that. Are you happy with how it's getting picked up? Is it rolling out well?
Today's our launch. So Byron Donalds and Congressman Byron Donalds from Florida, Senator Bill Hagerty, Steve Daines, and Richard Hudson, we're doing a call this afternoon, a press call. We're going to be rolling this out, but it'll be continuous. But then I'm going to take it to the county chairs, and we're going to have Bank Your Vote chairs in every state. But that's going to be their whole focus, is making sure in their precinct and in their polling area that voters are getting their votes early. We're going to get our high propensity voters. We're going to get those votes banked early so we can seek those low propensity voters on election day. You know, a lot of Republicans coming out of 2020 got spooked by voting by mail. And so it's twofold. We have to let voters know we're going to keep fighting in the courts. We're going to have poll watchers and poll workers, but we need to bank our votes early. So go to bankyourvote.com.
BankYourVote.com. Well done, Madam Chair. Keep coming back. Just expedite that schedule, please. Some of us have got calendars like weeks empty waiting for the RNC. Good to always talk to you, Chairwoman McDaniel. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Difference you can make in a kid's life. We have done this campaign every year for I don't know how many years, and every year you guys in the audience come through and bless a bunch of kids that have parents, either one or two parents, that are incarcerated. These are potentially at-risk kids. Let's talk to Darren Edwards of United Believers Community Church in Kansas City as to what this ministry is all about.
Well, one of the things I will share with those of you who are contemplating, should I share? Should I give my resources? I know things are tight, inflation is high, and you're making decisions on what to do and how to do. There's no better way to invest in the life of a child than you're becoming the hands and the feet of Jesus the moment you make that donation to support Angel Tree Camps. So I hope you will, and I pray you will.
I hope you will, and I pray you will as well. $200 is what will send one kid to camp. And as you know, with Christian camps, a week at camp can make all the difference in the world to a kid at this stage of their life. $200 or even any donation can be pooled with somebody else's donation, and eventually it will get a kid to camp. If you would just please go to HughHewitt.com, click on the Angel Tree Camp banner at the top, let it load. It'll take a second for that banner to load on the page. Or you can phone it in to 888-206-2764. That's 888-206-2764. But the easiest way is to click on the Angel Tree Camp banner at the top of HughHewitt.com.
Good morning, Jim Garrity. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh.
Do you have a favorite song that you play for your wife whenever you do a podcast or anything?
I do not on podcasts, but it's interesting you picked that one because I would say Harry Connick Jr. soundtrack to When Harry Met Sally. If we have a song, it's probably one of the ones from there.
Bingo, bingo. All right, Garrity, I understand you're upset about LVI and PGA. The only thing I care about is that Jason Kokrak win a major because I was on the same golf team as Jason Kokrak. 40 years apart, but nevertheless, I want him to win a major. Tell me why you're upset about this.
Sure. So you're probably familiar with the general accusation of sports washing, right? The idea that Saudi Arabia, which has this really terrible human rights record, and the U.S.-Saudi relationship has always been very complicated. Today's Morning Jolt, which I'm nearly done writing, I walk through. You can make the argument that Jamal Khashoggi should not single-handedly and his grim fate should not single-handedly ruin U.S.-Saudi relations. I think it was
the journalist who was dismembered in the Saudi Arabian embassy in Turkey.
Not just killed, they chopped up his body and distributed it at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. My attitude at the time was the U.S. had to effectively put Saudi Arabia in the timeout chair for a year or two to say, look, we have a complicated relationship. We're not blowing up our entire diplomatic relationship with you, but you crossed a line. We cannot avert our eyes from it, and we're going to have some sort of consequence. Instead, in the Democratic presidential primary in 2020, it turned into a game of can you top this and who's going to get toughest on Saudi Arabia. And Joe Biden famously promised, we're going to make them the pariah that they are, and decided that he was going to really go at MBS. Well, as your listeners know, it hasn't worked out that way. And in fact, it turns out we need them in a lot of ways. They need us in a lot of ways. We have not turned them into pariahs. And in fact, bit by bit, they have not been helpful in terms of oil production and world energy markets. We have built the drone air defense facility in Red Sands. I thought that was a way we could drag our feet to send a signal of displeasure. So now there's no evidence that, Saudi Arabia ever became any kind of a pariah. And now they've effectively purchased the game of golf. For a year, the Professional Golfers Association treated LIV as if it was one step above treason. And if they'd said, we don't like this rival league coming along and taking our golfers and hosting its own tournaments and getting its own TV deals and making money, if they'd said it was simply a financial rivalry, I'd get it, right? The problem is they invoked 9/11 and they talked about 15 of the 19 Saudi hijackers. They referred to the 9/11 families and they basically said this is a moral issue, right? That this was an issue of Saudi money has blood on its hands and we don't want our guys associating with it until they got our share of it. Well, now they're okay. Now we're perfectly fine with them. The leader, we see this in China. I wrote last week about all the U.S. companies that have operations going on in Uganda. With that god-awful anti-gay law, during Pride Month, not a single U.S. corporation has said, you know what? We can't do business in Uganda anymore. It's too much. You're throwing people in jail for 5 years for identifying as gay.
The bottom line problem is that American business thinks its customers are mokes, right? We're dummies. That's it, right? They just think we're mokes.
Yes. Because here's the thing. The leadership of big, influential American institutions are for sale to the highest bidder. And there is no – well, at that point, go work with the North Koreans. I'm sure Pyongyang has got some great deal on the table for, other sports leagues. Go ahead and do it. They certainly have no problem with the Saudis. They certainly have no problem with the Chinese. Pakistan, Indonesia. Hey, how do gays – oh, no. Let's put some rainbows in our store windows, and that will make it okay. Look, I've had it. And here's the thing. If you want to make it a moral dream, don't turn around and suddenly say, oh, okay, Saudi Arabia is okay now.
There are two enormous human rights issues in the world today. One is that Ukrainian citizens are being mercilessly killed and now flooded. It appears, based on the latest reporting, the Russians blew up the dam. It's not the same as blowing up the pipeline, which the Ukrainians did. It blew up the dam, and a lot of people are underwater. And then we have China, which is in a genocide against 1 million Uyghurs. I went to my reunion last week, and we had a panel of, quote, experts on China. If you had the Uyghurs on your bingo card, Jim, you didn't get a letter. What's that tell you about? And that's a Harvard Law, Harvard Business, Harvard undergraduate professor. Not one mention about the Uyghurs.
It's like, why is the United States losing its position in the world? Why are we losing leverage? Why are we finding ourselves with less and less ability to stand up for our values? Because our leaders are for sale. That's why. because everyone wants a chunk of that Chinese money. Everybody wants a chunk of that their operations to, you know, manufacturing to be moved to Karachi and Indonesia and places like that. You know, I'm not asking for a ton. I can't imagine that Uganda is so central to the profit margin of Anheuser-Busch. They'll put somebody on a can, but they won't say, no, I'm sorry, Uganda's, you know, like we can't operate in Uganda anymore. That's too much to ask. There's the Ugandan market is just too profitable for them to say that.
Well, I'm going to have to read the Morning Jolt. Now I want to go to the second double standard of the morning, the one that's got me exercised. A nutter calls up Jim Banks 8 times and escalates his threats every time, concluding with, here's your choice. Either you can grow up without your daughters or your daughters can grow up without you. They arrest him yesterday. Have you seen that story anywhere, Jim?
I had seen the headline, and when Dwayne said you wanted to talk about it, I went and I found the CNN article. It certainly wasn't front and center on the CNN homepage or anything
like that.
What
do you think?
That's a busy. There's other stuff going on in the world, but yeah, if this had been somebody threatening AOC, this would have been top story. This would have been on the homepage. This would have been, you know, network, you know, hour by hour updates on the arrest of this guy.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, now let's get some Ron McDaniel's coming up at the bottom of the hour. What do you want to know about the debate rules?
My boss, Rich Lowry, suggested the idea that the RNC host the debate itself and pick the moderators. I think you'd be fine. I think Mary Catherine Hamm would be fine. You know, pick people who ask good, smart questions of everyone's open-ended questions, by the way. I don't want gotchas. I don't, as Fred Thompson famously said, no hand shows. None of this, you know, you can't summarize, you know, you can't summarize complicated presidential decisions with yes or no questions. It's tough, right? Sometimes the stuff is complicated. But I think what Rich suggested is, you know, the RNC hosts it and says anybody who wants to broadcast it can broadcast it. And a whole bunch of cable networks would say, okay, that's going to get higher ratings than whatever else we'd have on there, whether it's, you know, Anderson Cooper or whatever. And they broadcast it. And one, you reach a much broader audience because it's not just on one cable network. It's on a bunch of cable networks. And also, like, this makes it easier because, like, you know, Trump doesn't want to do Fox News because he's mad at Fox News. There are a bunch of Republicans who don't trust CNN or don't trust MSNBC or something like that. And that way, hopefully, you reach the broadest possible audience. And, you know, everybody feels like they're getting a fair shot.
There's an assumption built in there, too, actually, Jim, and I disagree with you. One is that the RNC has the production ability to do that. Because we're talking about a $20 million production that requires lighting and set design and timing and all that stuff. The second is that even if they did do it, that it would look good. The moderators might be great. I think you can do it, Mary Catherine, I can do it. We got a bunch of people who can moderate debates. But I'm just afraid of the production value sucking.
Hmm. Well, that's a fair objection. On the other hand, if it takes $20 million or whatever the amount is, like the RNC does know a few donors, right? And I don't know. I wonder whether this would be under campaign contribution limits. I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure
we find somebody.
I'm sure it would be. And so I just think it's complicated. I actually have no objection if they have good moderators. I don't even mind having liberal moderators if they're conservative moderators. What do you make of Chris Christie? I'm going to play all of his town hall on the Grand Old Pod today because it's a hilarious town hall. Did you watch it? Did you see it?
I did not. I was too busy noticing the Saudis taking over the game of golf.
Oh, you got to go watch it. Calling Trump Voldemort is a pretty inspired reference, but it generally is Do you think he's going to keep this up from now until he exits the race?
So, one, I certainly hope so. To the extent he can do anything useful and productive in this competition, because I think we all see the extraordinarily high, steep climb ahead of him to get the nomination. My fear is that Chris Christie, well, first of all, if as Trump threatens, he's not on that debate stage for the first one. Whether Chris Christie takes his time on the next biggest target, which is DeSantis, and we end up with a rerun of 2016. Christie could have been really.
I don't think he's going to do that. I think he learned, but we'll find out. I'll talk to him this week. Tim Scott tomorrow, Mike Pence Monday, and everybody next week. Mike Pence Friday. Garrity the Indispensable. Follow him on Jim Garrity. Get the Morning Jolt. Read him at the Washington Post. Follow me in the next segment. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. Michael Blue Bay. It's the Fetching Miss Hewitt's birthday. It is a high tradition on our birthday and our anniversary, if we're on the air, to remind me every day how lucky I am, how blessed I am. Married for 41 years in a couple of weeks. Been almost 41 years. I was telling her yesterday, I've known you for 45 years. That's a long time. And she has adapted. Mary Catherine Hamm joins me. We were waiting. Good morning, Hammer. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Great. It's the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt's birthday, so I've got to be on my toes all day. Yeah. So
happiest birthday to her. I got to put it on the podcast.
Well, you know, she'll hear it then, because she listens a lot more to you than she listens to me. And I'm not jealous, Hammer. I'm not. But
no,
she's
not
also starting. She's got a man crush on Vic Mattis now, too. She tells me about Vic every day. It used to be what Hammer was saying. Now it's about Vic. And
I mean, Vic is infectious. You know, he's just people love that guy.
Well, you know, that's how you get in trouble. Mary Catherine, I'm so glad you got up because I wanted to ask you about one story that not many people will see or hear. But if you do the reverse, this happens to someone on the left, it would be everywhere. I'll read it to you. A Fort Wayne man has been arrested and charged for allegedly leaving threatening voicemail on U.S. Congressman Jim Banks' phone. Aaron Thompson, 34, is charged with intimidation with a threat to commit a forcible felony and harassment by means of a telephone call. On April 6th, Thompson left a voicemail on Banks' office phone and said he hoped Banks dies in a car crash and made vulgar statements about Banks' wife. On October 11th, Thompson called again. Oh, yeah, we'll give her two bullets. Malay, how's your moles on your face, you little blank head, Thompson said. In another voicemail, Thompson said he owns a gun because the Constitution allows him. And here's the choice, he added. Your daughters grew up without their dad, or you grew up without your daughters. How do you like that? I know what your opinion is. I'll make the decision. All right. So U.S. Capitol Police found him. And you can find anyone who's stupid enough to leave three voicemails. But have you seen that story yet, Mary Catherine Hamm?
I have not seen that. And this is something that the media does, which is it's a real self-validating circle they have, which is right-wing people are the only ones who have tendencies toward political violence. And therefore, we either alchemy the left-leaning people into right-leaning people, or we just ignore them completely. And therefore, the data set, as far as it appears to regular people consuming the news, is that, oh my gosh, it only is right-leaning people who are involved in political violence, when in fact, that is not the case at all.
Now, political violence on my list includes all of it, and that would include the January 6th rioters, including those who have been convicted. And there are 1,000 people who got arrested. About half of them have been convicted. But you've also got the softball shooting, the baseball shooting near your house and mine when we live in Old Town. You've got the assassination attempt on Brett Kavanaugh. You've got this. I mean, there's a long list. And the manifesto from Nashville, we still haven't seen. Why do you think we haven't seen that manifesto, Mary Catherine Hamm?
I mean, I think it's Occam's razor, right? I think the reason we haven't seen it is because it has the wrong messages. It won't be easy to sort of sweep that one under the rug because it is likely targeted at Christian Americans. And it's likely indicative of a politically driven crime that they don't want to talk about. That would be my guess. I don't want to be that person. I want to assume there's a real security reason we don't know this. I don't think that's the case when it comes to covering political violence and talking about it in public. I'm still mad about the congressional baseball shooting, obviously, because it was a tragedy, but I'm mad about the coverage still, because it was less than 48 hours of vans out by that baseball field. I know, because I lived right next to that baseball field. And the excuse the press always gives is it was flyover country and we didn't have enough vans. The national news presence wasn't there. what's the excuse for this? It's 4 miles from the Capitol.
Yeah.
But everyone disappeared.
And Jim Banks is running for Senate. He is going to be a senator from Indiana. He's going to be in the Senate for a long time, and he has young children. This is the Achilles heel of everyone in public life. Now, my kids are grown. I don't have to worry about this anymore. I never mentioned them on the air for 30 years until the youngest of them was gone and out of college, because it was just, we got threatened once, and I said, that's it. But this is the Achilles heel, and the left goes after it, Mary Catherine, and we don't hear about it.
Yeah, it's a scary thing, and there are a lot of people out there who want to intimidate you into not talking. I've had it done myself. I have, like, you know, had creepers come after us, and I try to keep my children basically anonymous for that reason. And it's part of being in public life, and it shouldn't be part of being in public life. But one of the ways to make sure that there's less of it is to equally punish those who are involved with it, regardless of their political affiliation. And I feel like we do not do that in the public sphere.
You know, what's interesting is I don't know anything about Mr. Aaron Thompson, except that his name is Aaron Thompson. And he's age 34. Would it be reversed if AOC was on the receiving end? And I hope she isn't, but I'm sure she is.
Oh, 100%. I mean, this is one of those things where I want to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I've just done doing that because that's not how coverage works for this kind of thing. It's just not.
Unless and until you know of this story on all the networks on the same day that you hear about it from me, the media is broken. MK Hammer, Getting Hammered is her podcast with Vic Mattis. And on my wife's birthday, I have to say it's her favorite podcast. So thank you, MK. Back America, June 7th, the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt's birthday. We always play her song, our song, on every single break on today. Joined by Olivia Beavers of Politico, one of their Capitol Hill correspondents. Good morning, Olivia. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh, and happy birthday to Ms. Hewitt.
Thank you. Thank you. Olivia, do you cover threats to members of Congress, threats of physical violence? Is that your beat?
It's not my beat, but it's still something that we would cover generally, me and my team, for sure.
Right. Now, Politico does not have a story on the Jim Banks threat. Have you heard about it yet?
Yes. I tweeted it out yesterday. It was flagged from a local news story, and a source of mine flagged it, and I was like, oh, this is not getting enough attention. So I put it out there as well. I think you make a good point. I was hearing your show earlier today, and you were talking about the unevenness in coverage. And I think that that's something that's fair to point out with reporters and the media sometimes, and how things get covered and how things don't. So I will definitely check into that, because it's a pretty horrible, horrific story that you have threats against your kids in the way that.
Yeah, it elevates it. It's not just another nut calling your office. I mean, they all deal with this, right? I'm sure you've talked to every member. It can be Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal. They all deal with nuts. But when the guy calls 8 times and threatens to kill your kids, that's a different level of nuttiness. And I just think, I cannot believe it isn't on cable. Olivia, in terms of the debt limit deal, does it restrict the ability to do what Mike Gallagher just said, in your opinion, which is go back and take the unspent appropriations for defense over the past 4 or 5 years? $25 billion each year hadn't been spent. Do you think they can use that going forward without losing the Freedom Caucus?
I think that if you're using unspent money, the Freedom Caucus will not have a problem. It's additional funding where they're going to be really protesting. But you're also starting to hear some of these red lines being drawn in terms of Speaker McCarthy and Ukraine funding. You know, they don't want additional money put in defense. They want what their caps were. So not more than $886 billion, I think, is the number off the top of my head. If they can wrangle within those confines, the Freedom Caucus will not have an issue. It's adding additional price tags where they're going to start rearing their heads.
You know, I asked Ken Calvert yesterday, or maybe it was another congressman on Monday, how many of the no votes on the debt deal were hawks, defense hawks? And he said a couple of dozen votes. That's not insignificant, Olivia. That's kind of a new threat to the speaker's continued. I think he's doing a fine job. I think the deal was the only deal he could do. But if you lose 2 dozen hawks, what's that tell you?
I mean, I've been hearing chatter sort of at a low vibration, that where there was discussions initially about them opposing the debt deal because of the price tag on defense. They were able to sort of swallow what what the agreement was with the Biden administration, but I don't think that the Hawks are happy by any means by what, by the final total. With them voting against it, it's showing that they're willing to buff the speaker if defense is not taken seriously enough. And I know that that was something that defense Hawks were coming up and telling me privately. They will buck the speaker if there is not enough support for the Pentagon, because they believe that the missions in combating a growing CCP in Ukraine, et cetera, are very important.
All right. Now, Olivia, defeating a rule, which happened yesterday in Congress, is not the same as entering a motion to vacate. It's sort of like a shots fired. What were they doing? Now, Matt Gaetz is a party of one, and I don't attribute anything to Matt Gaetz, and he's got like three or four buckaroos with him who are just nutty as can be. But what does that portend that they killed a rule?
So this is very unusual. There's first for just to explain it, you pass a rule for the bill to come to a full vote, and you can vote against the bill, but it's more of a procedural process to get it to the floor. And conservatives, you have Ken Buck, you have Scott Perry, you have Chip Roy. They're angry about two different things. One is how the debt ceiling was handled. They felt like they weren't included in the process. They said that the spending levels go against what the speaker promised them back in January. And then they're also alleging that the number two, Steve Scalise, made a soft threat against Andrew Clyde, saying, if you don't support the rule, then we're not going to bring your pistol brace bill to the floor. And that also angered them. And so they decided to make this a lesson. Tim Burchett said, we decided to send leadership a clear message by voting down this rule, which has not been done, I think, since 2002. And so Republican leadership, I was watching top staff and their members walking off the floor, and they looked deflated. But conservatives were coming out saying, we won't be steamrolled. We wanted to show the leader that this is what happens when you don't take us into consideration. And we have more tricks up our sleeve, but they won't tell us what those are. So
Chip Roy and Ken Buck are responsible members of I can't imagine them filing a motion to vacate. This is kind of a shot across the bow. I'm not sure it's going to change much. Olivia_Beavers at Twitter, @Olivia_Beavers, and at Politico. Thank you, Olivia. Always a pleasure. Good morning, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Morning glory. Bonjour, hi, Canada. If you're a new listener, you won't get this. But this is the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt, my favorite song. And it's birthday. Happy birthday, Fetching Mrs. Hewitt. Just thinking of you. We always love this song. It's the only time I dance, and that's using the term dance rather loosely. But it is the obligatory dance. But I love to dance with the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt, and she's I got the younger girl, and so I'm wishing her a wonderful happy birthday. I'm going to have to go on a nature hike today. You know, the only thing that's wrong with this marriage is that she loves to go on hikes. I like to trundle on streets, but she likes to hike. Usually vertically. I'm a horizontal, get me to the beach where it's flat guy, and she's a vertical climber. And it's worked out. We, you know, once a year I'll do this. But then we'll have a wonderful dinner tonight. But it's happy birthday, FMH. Let me go through the news. The biggest piece of news is that the United States now knows that Ukraine blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. Now, Ukraine, I didn't know they had that capability, did you? Did you think that it was Ukraine? I didn't think it was Ukraine. I thought it was us. But nope, it was Ukraine. They blew it up. And good on them. It's a war, right? That's foreign capital not going. Now, their allies might not like it so much. But in turn, it looks like the Russians blew the dam that's flooding Ukraine. And a nightmare for everyone involved, and may threaten a meltdown at the world's largest or Europe's largest nuclear plant. A deliberate explosion inside the Kharkova Dam on the front line of the war in Ukraine most likely caused its collapse on Tuesday, according to engineering and munitions experts, who said that structural failure and attack from outside the dam were possible, but less plausible explanation. Ukrainian officials blame Russia for the failure, noting that Russia's military forces, which have repeatedly struck Ukrainian infrastructure since invading last year, controlled the dams spanning the Dnipro River, putting them in a position to detonate explosives from within. Well, yeah, if it's an internal explosion and Russia controls the dam, it's like, oh, So Ukraine blew the Nord Stream and Russia blew the dam. This might be a war. Yes, it's a war. And both sides are trying to win. Both sides are trying to destroy the opponent's government and forces and army. And it's a war. And Americans aren't used to this sort of thing or haven't seen this sort of thing since 2003. We're used to counterinsurgency and low intensity conflict and collapses in Afghanistan. This is World War One style. Knockdown. And it's not going anywhere soon. Yesterday, Vivek Ramaswamy put out a call to just simply walk away and close this thing down and worry about getting right with Russia because they are in an alliance with China. I'll get to that a little bit later, as I will Chris Christie's announcement yesterday. Mike Pence has dropped his announcement this morning. I'll play that as soon as we load it up. The field is set. Ron McDaniel is here. The field is set, except for maybe Glenn Youngkin getting in or out. I don't know. But I think the field is set. And I think we'll have 6 to 8 candidates on the first debate stage. What I'll be talking about with Chairman McDaniel is the initial bar is 40,000 individual contributors and a 1% in the polls. Will that double every time or will it go up more gradually? That's my question. Other news, Tony Blinken, Secretary of State, is in Saudi Arabia begging for them to forgive us for saying bad things about them because we need their oil. And what a surprise. The world doesn't really care about our human rights policy when it's not applied equally and across the board. And if you never mention the Uyghurs, 1 million people are in jail and prison and are being methodically destroyed. It's a genocide declared by our State Department, affirmed by the State Department under President Biden. It's a genocide. When you don't mention a genocide in China every day, and China doesn't like to have it mentioned, so we don't. It's pretty hard to lean on MBS for the murder of one journalist in a Turkish embassy. It was grisly. We know about it. It's terrible. Saudi Arabia has apologized, but Joe Biden really stepped in it, and now Tony Blinken is groveling. For a time yesterday, until the Ukrainian blew up the Nord Stream, the biggest story was that the PGA Tour and the LIV Golf had agreed to merge. I no longer watch golf except for Jason Kokrak, who I played golf with. We were on the same golf team, about 40 years apart. And about 40 strokes apart. But I follow Jason Kokrak. But other than that, I just don't care. And I couldn't believe that the PGA's merger with LIV Golf surprised anyone. Look, it's always about the money in sports. It's always about the money in sports. I love sports. I love to watch them. Go Browns. Go Red Sox. No, did I say that? I meant go Red Sox cap. We are auctioning a Red Sox cap. Brian the banker, I gave him my Red Sox cap, which I had to wear because I went to the Harvard reunion and I was melting. And the only cap I could buy with the Red Sox hat. And he's offered to match any donation to Angel Tree. And I want you to give to Angel Tree anyway, whether it's $10 or $100 or $500. But if you want to be in the competition for the hat, you have to send an email along. You have to contribute, send the receipt to Generalissimo. You contribute at Hugh Hewitt, wait for the banner. It comes up on the top. And when you get the banner and you contribute, we'll put you in the hopper going forward. If you put, I want Brian the banker's Red Sox hat, then we'll put you in the hopper. Head over to HughHewitt.com and the banner's at the top. Chris Christie has entered the race. I told you that. And boy, did he throw some haymakers. Governor DeSantis fired a professor. I don't think he fired him, actually. I think that New College decided not to renew Richard Corcoran's contract because he's a lefty and he's denigrating the effort to turn New College into a viable institution. Columbia University is pulling out of the U.S. News and World Report college ranking. Don't ask me why. I don't care, actually, but it was a headline I saw yesterday. And, you know, there are some headlines that I just pull for no reason whatsoever. Rod Stewart wants to sell his Los Angeles chateau. And I paused because it was in the journal on the front page. And I said, I like Rod Stewart. And in fact, we'll probably come back with Rod Stewart singing someday when you're awfully low and you're feeling, I can't remember the words. There will be I can't remember the words. Rod Stewart put his house up. Generalissimo, do you want to bet what the house cost?
40,
you might want to check this out.
$47 million.
You're only off by $33 million. It's a $23 million. It's a $70 million house. Are you going to run up there and check it out today?
Absolutely not. I'm just still floored that you are you're still searching for the lyrics to your favorite song.
Someday when I'm awfully low, I have to sing them. That's why I can't repeat them, and you don't want to hear me sing them. By the way, you're looking skinny today. Are you back down to your approved rate on myphdweightloss.com?
I'm just about there. We went and saw the Spider-Verse-y thing.
Oh, how was that?
It was very spidery.
Did you take the butter off the popcorn?
No. See, that's the problem. It wasn't even just the popcorn that did me in. It was the popcorn sprinkled with the plain M&Ms on top.
And you consider yourself a MyPhDWeightLoss.com spokesperson?
Well, see, here's...
Actually, that's not bad. Because you're still within your range, right?
I'm still within my range. And two, I'm now at the top end of my range again, which means I'm now behaving for the next couple days. And
ooh.
I will... Do you understand the concept of maintenance?
864-644-1900.
That's 864-644-1900.
My friend Ruth Marcus took the drugs, and she wrote a column about it over at the Washington Post. I sent her a note last night, and I complimented her on her courage. And she said, not courageous, it's just what I did. She lost a bunch of weight using the new drugs.
Yeah.
I prefer the MyPhDWeightLoss.com.
It's a lot easier. A
lot easier, and it saves money, right?
Oh, of course it does. Absolutely. Yeah,
you normally wouldn't buy the buttered popcorn with the peanut M&Ms on top.
I didn't say peanut M&Ms.
Tell me you had a root beer with that.
No, I didn't.
Did you have a root beer with that?
No.
Okay, just checking.
Why would I have a root beer?
Can I finish my news here? A federal judge has blocked Florida's ban on medical care for transgendered minors. I believe, by the way, that this will be thrown out on appeal. He's a Clinton appointee. He's senior status. I'm sure he's a fine guy, but he wants to go out by being woke. And you know what? The way I read Dobbs is that medical decisions belong with the states, not with the federal government. And that's the way it's going to be. There is no right to privacy that allows a state that requires a state to provide puberty blockers or gender transforming surgery. There just isn't. There is no constitutional right to that. I don't know how he got to it. I'm not going to read his thing. Companies that embrace social issues have second thoughts. I love this story more than any because You think Bud Light. All right. And then finally, I'm going to talk about this when I come back. The most important story of the day is in The Atlantic. Phones at school are a disaster. They should be banned. Jonathan Haidt wrote a long piece, which I put on Twitter yesterday, and like 1,000 different people retweeted, because it's what we all intuit. There should be no cell phones in any school, K-12, period, at any time. Put them in a locker when you come in. You're expelled if you show up in class or anywhere on recess with them. We're here to shape your mind, not poison them. Haidt has the receipts. That story is over at theatlantic.com. You should be a subscriber to that. When I come back, boy, we got a lot of audio. There will be a grand old pod today, and you're going to have to listen to it because I haven't got time.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.